Good morning, everybody. December 16th, and this is Westchester on the Level. Let me quickly play the introduction.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
I just love that introduction. The only problem is I don't remember to play it at the opening before anything is said. Well, I'll get that figured out. Since we've made so many changes to the airwaves, the Blog Talk Radio platform has been changing and evolving, I think, quite often to the better. But you know, with all these changes, there are glitches. There's this doesn't work or something works, but then it impacts. Just goes on and on. You know how it is. And I guess, but that's the state of flux and the state of change and just the state of everything going topsy-turvy. And I guess there will come eventually a point where things seem to be working perfectly, and then even then there'll be somebody who'll figure out something even better. So I've already come to where the changes that seemingly are coming about, that people say we different, that they're not, you know, it's the same old. I really wonder if anybody's reinvented the wheel, even though everyone would like to take credit for creating a new set of wheels. So we'll just have to see. And time it all, rather than us here, because we're so close to it. And that's the difficulties of reporting, trying to figure out if you can see, or if you are just, you know, you're looking at a mirage, you're looking at some sort of concoction of your own mind, as opposed to the reality that's right before you. And that is the secret. Well, today we're expecting to get a call from Sharif Awad from Cairo, and for whatever reasons, you never know. There's an eight-hour difference between us and him in Cairo. I think it's 8 hours. And so that would make it about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the height of the rush hour in Cairo. And so you never can tell. He could just be strictly stuck in traffic, which doesn't help us any because we're hoping to actually hear him today. But for whatever reason, it is what it is. So rather than tell you a little bit about it, and I'll tell you a little bit about it, and then if he calls, that'll be great. And if he can't for whatever reasons, then what we'll try to do is simply give him an opportunity to talk about this later on in the week. So what I found interesting is that he wrote an article in this week's Westchester December 19th issue, which is being printed, always gets printed on Monday, and then gets distributed throughout Westchester County from Tuesday through Thursday. So it takes us 3 days to distribute the paper, and it's all physically distributed. Well, metal kiosk type boxes that we fill up every week, and this is where and how you get paper. So the interesting article that he wrote is about viewing Egypt from a different angle, talking about being close to something, one thing and maybe not another. And there are always different facets, different angles, different ways of looking at things. And in his review of a movie called Crop, C-R-O-P. Crop is a way, I guess, is an introspection by two artists, one, a Danish woman by the name of Johanna Domke, D-O-M-K-E, and an Egyptian by the name of Marouane Omara, and they presented their work, Crop, and it's interesting, some of the background. The Dane, Johanna Domke, is is born, of course, in Denmark, but she studied in Germany and in Argentina and also in Malmo in Sweden. And he is Egyptian, and he also studied and in Istanbul, Turkey. And so they met with somehow or another. They got together and they did some work, collaborative work in the past. But CROP is really interesting because, you know, a lot of people talk about writing and how important writing is. But one of the most important, one of the most important methods of reaching out and making a point, whether it be critical or positive in its critique, is the visual. The visual is probably the most complicated and yet the most simple manner by which you literally suck up that information. You see visually, whether it be through film or through, you know, photos or in real life, it has an impact on you. Some of it's so strong that it happens. And it impresses into your mind. It's like, and you can't get rid of it. Like, God forbid you see something that's horrific. It will be etched in your mind forever. The impact, for example, of the assassination of an individual, there's just so much that is, digested by the mind when you just hear the words. You don't always quite get it. It's not so visceral. It's not in your face. It's not in your gut. But sometimes a picture will make the difference. You know, I can reflect and I can see right now the assassination of the former president, John Kennedy, when he was in Dallas. When we heard about the fact that he had been shot, you know, it was not as gut-wrenching as when I saw the actual pictures, the film of the drive-by in the car with the president and Texas and the driver and, of course, Mrs. Kennedy by the president's side, and seeing her immediately recognize that her husband was hurt. And I don't even remember why she actually seemed to somehow bring herself over the back part of the car. It's an open Lincoln Continental, and she seemed to just I don't know exactly what she did there, but whatever. I remember this scene, and when you looked at it, you saw the lifelessness of the president. The picture seemed to pierce beyond the words. You couldn't even hear the words, but you saw the picture. And the picture became the story. And later on, the mind had already captured what was, or what one thought was, because who knows if there was more to it than that. Once the mind had etched that photo in your head or the film, then what ended up happening began the process of telling the story. The gaps needed to be filled in. And I remember to this day, may we rest in peace, my son's wife would talk about the... He was the head of the Yonkers Philharmonic Orchestra and unfortunately died. Definitely a tragic loss. I'll never forget him. I remember when we're talking about music, and for some, music is the feeling that one gets from it. It doesn't always have to be cerebral. Yet some people are tuned to... their comfort level is cerebral. So because they want to expose a particular issue through their mind or to stretch their mind, whatever it is, they go in that direction. people feel more, or they get a greater appreciation by just hearing the beat, listening to the tune, or whatever. So there's no way to judge this. There are a million ways and everything, and that's what's really fascinating about it all. Let me just see if I can do this, because this is really important. It's coming in. We'll be back to this issue in a moment, but I guess it's important. It's important to realize, you know, things around us as they go on. One second. Okay, I just noticed this in my email. Bear with me a second. Hopefully this will take. Okay, just give me another moment. Okay. Here it is. This just came out. The market, as you all know, opens up. The stock market opens up at 9:30 in the morning. And stocks surged today on Wall Street as Wall Street tried what's ahead for monetary stimulus one day ahead of a two-day Federal Reserve's meeting. So the Dow has Dow making a digit climb with what the Fed will be doing on view. So it's really, really interesting. what was it here? As with the only relevant thing for markets this week, the Fed will be weighing its analysis of the data versus the issues of managerial attrition, pondering the logistics of holiday-type liquidity that would respond to any change, noted Peter Bokvar, chief market analyst at the Lindsay Group, referring to the timing of when the Fed would begin to reduce its $85 billion in monthly bond purchases. This is the story of the day and probably continue into tomorrow. So thanks for and allowing me that little diversion. So getting back to the way people view things when we're talking about music, so there's a way to feel it, the way to digest it, whether it be digested through the gut or whether it be digested through the mind, it is. And the same thing goes with news and events and how we view things. And in Sharif the Westchester Guardian, you'll see this cultural perspectives is the way we call it, because he views things from a different fact somehow, one that sometimes evades us. And the beauty and the concern of hearing his voice is because it is different. It's different. It's unique. It's not right and it's not wrong. It just is a perspective, and that's what we need to engage in, perspective, in the hope that hearing, visualizing, recognizing a particular perspective, we too, from where we sit, from our vantage point, whatever it happens to be, and on every issue, it's always different. Because you could be at one place with one issue, at another place with another issue, and that's the whole point. And a community becomes a sharing of this information, and sometimes you'll find a sliver of righteousness for you in a particular expression of thought from wherever you are listening and getting it from that you had never, ever realized existed. Fascinating. So these two artists, two filmmakers working together, Johanna Domke and Maraun O'Mara, they put together this film, and it wasn't taken in the streets of Independence Square. It wasn't taken in the streets of Cairo. It wasn't taken on the outside. It was all taken and constructed from the inside. And you say, well, where is the inside? The inside is Ahram or Al-Aram, but it's Al-Ahram, the newspaper, the number one newspaper in all of Egypt, probably in the Middle East, one of the most important papers in the entire Middle East, always, you know, again, Egypt, Central, everything, everything around Egypt. You know, and the bottom line is the way Egypt goes is the way most of the Middle East goes, from Morocco all the way to Iraq. And now you've got all the forces all over the place. So Iraq is engaged in taking over. I mean, Iran is which is not an Arab country. It's a Persian people. And they're different from the other Muslims in the world, from Iraq all the way through to Morocco. It's a different sect of people. And the bottom line is there's always been this tug of war between the forces in Iran and the Arab world. And Iran does frighten a lot of people in the Arab world. But Iran has certainly made a big impact in Iraq and certainly has a big impact all the way into Syria. And so there are different forces nowadays that never existed, but this Arab Spring that began in Tunisia and spread throughout the North Africa and into the Middle East, and actually a little bit beyond, what ended up happening is that things were viewed a different way. But the biggest impact of all was that was out of the newspaper Al-Ahram. And it is those pictures that will define this story, the Arab Spring. And it is the pictures that they that created it, that was understood across the world. And again, when you say understood, there are definitions to understanding. And what one gains in one country is not what one gains in another country. Sometimes color will cause the mind to somehow, for whatever reasons, direct the translation of the photos differently in one person than in another. Sometimes color will cause people to coil. Sometimes the amount of gore will turn people off, so they don't get the message. So the message eclipses them, goes over their head, goes around their heart, but not into it. So, you know, these are the differences. And it's so important to be able to judge where you are as best you can. Everybody judges differently, but it's so important to sometimes sit down and smell the roses. And in a sense, that's what it's all about. And say, well, why am I feeling this way? Why am I feeling this way? Why am I interpreting something this way? And what is the rationale behind it? And only people who want to know, who want to learn, who want to appreciate what's out there will expose themselves and say, hey, this is what I see. This is what I think. This is what I feel. And if you get a counter position, there's nothing wrong with that position. It's just that it's different. But if you're able to share the two different aspects, or three, or four, or five, there are an infinite number of issues that can be brought into the mix. The point is that it's that discourse, that appreciation for difference in concept, that about a finality as best it can be finalized amongst the few that will actually share this information and become introspective of it. And that's the point. So again, you have a distillation of concepts and thinking and this and what, and it's all put together. And sometimes the even further, because from where you once stood, you may now climb or descend to a different place based on what you hear. And if you're able to assimilate all in your mind, and you're able to go further because there's a greater understanding, greater incorporation of thinking, and therefore evaluation of the process and of the circumstance that caused you to come to your conclusion. That doesn't mean it's finished. There is not an end game. There is a continuous exploration of whatever you left off with when you thought about a particular issue. So if the issue ended yesterday and you're going to visiting it again for whatever reasons, whatever sparks that return to that point, that little chapter in your life, there may be a cause for another change. And change does not mean that you're evolving. It could be a devolution as well. Evolution doesn't necessarily mean that you're less than work. That is where the whole situation needs to be placed. Sometimes it cannot be at the most lofty place. It cannot always be at the pinnacle of whatever you're looking at. Sometimes it's at the nadir. It's at the lowest point. So, or it could be in between. Usually there's a place where it extends from one end of the or another of that pendulum. But each end, whether the nadir or the zenith, the bottom line is that can also be expanded. So never limit yourself to one or the other. So that's what's so fascinating about this article by Sharif Awad. It's called Crop. His interpretation of the movie and the brilliance in the thinking by both Johanna Domke and Maraoun Omara, because what ended up happening is that they looked at things from a perspective normally not recognized or subliminal in our ability to perceive it. And that's the beauty of it. And again, you say to yourself, well, why is this so important? It's just a film. The point is that and its critique by Sharif Awad ends up relating an aspect looking at things that may change your perception of, let's say, the Arab Spring, Egypt, the sensibilities of its news networks, and so on. And what applies to Egypt, the movie, the sense of reaching out to people is the same, whether it be in Tanganyika or whether it be in Myanmar or whether it be in Australia or the U.S. or Chile. And that's what's important to recognize. And when you look at it from that perspective, I can't imagine what else it could be other than a template that is not sacrosanct, but a template from which you can expand. And I guess what I find so striking about the article is not only the, well, I don't know Johanna Domke, I don't know Maraoun Omara, the filmmakers, but what I do know is I know a little bit about Sharif Awad, and I can only appreciate in the most stellar way his ability, his eye, and the eye of new things in a way that I had not previously seen. And what I found exciting about this write-up, as well as others, more so I think in the last few months than ever before, is that he brings a perspective that is not normally heard. I don't know why it's not heard more often, but it's not that other critiques are lazy. They're just not as deep. But again, that may be my own personal bias because I appreciate the cerebral aspect of it. That's a comfort zone for me, or I would hope it's my comfort zone. Maybe I'm deceiving myself. Maybe I'm not so smart, and I know I'm not, but the bottom line is I somehow gravitate toward the cerebral, and that's what I find exciting, and that's what I find the most. Maybe it's my maybe it's another thing. Maybe my lack of or insecurity might deny me the ability to be more emotional level for me from the cerebral as opposed to the emotional. You know, it's always there and always cerebral no matter who the person is. But I guess I gravitate toward one end of the pendulum while others may gravitate to another or to a higher level than I on the cerebral end of the pendulum or to a lesser extent emotionally, however it works. Everyone's different, and that's what makes us all unique. That's why, in a sense, maybe it's the wrong term, but collective of minds and perspectives are what really will bring us closer together, at least from the point of view of understanding. And then, you know, if you want to understand, you see, that's really the issue. Do you want to understand? Is that a goal? Or is that like a sideline? You know, let's face it, we're all consumed bringing up a family by maintaining enough food and a roof over your head, as well as building security for older age and stuff like that. Those are all issues. And of course, when is there time to house? Is not everyone has time. So we're very lucky to have people like Sharifa Awad who are busy about understanding and exploring. And the exploration of film, it's amazing, you know, because I can't imagine. Well, he's got a lot more, patience. Can you imagine he's going to be doing 500 film reviews that he has to go through that will be presented to the festival for whom he's a curator. He's going to have to go through all of that as others, but he's going to be the one to steal that whole number of entries, a much lesser amount that will eventually be judged. But the fact that he's got the patience to sit through it all and to contemplate what they're saying and how they're saying it and how it's perceived, that's a fantastic, fantastic repertoire of work that and that's why, for example, some of our experience process gives credibility to the people, you know, for something unique and something special. That's why, for example, I always look forward to Tuesdays when Rich Narod, co-host of the show, is able to come on because, again, he too has a perspective. He has a history. He has a legacy. He has the experience. He has the knowledge that he brings to the subject matter. So he has appreciation and understanding, and he lived through many of the issues, whether it be education or real estate or working with government, in government, and so on. So these are the sort of things that you can't always find in an 18-year-old, even though there are just brilliant people way ahead of the curve. When I was 20, I don't know if I may not have been ahead of a five-year-old today, but then again, you know, I'm 10 times their age. So, you know, this is sometimes it has nothing to do with it. It's just a question of also experience and how building a network that raises you. So I don't know. This is in a sense that this goes on. So unfortunately, I have a funny suspicion that Sharif is stuck somewhere on the road and in traffic. So we're going to have to consider this into the future. So that's what's going on over there. And what I'd like to do is also then look at some other concerns that are more local. Let me just see. You know what? While I'm pulling that up, let me play for you what's going on at the Westchester Broadway Theater, and then we'll be right back. So listen in for a moment. Okay.
Great news for holiday shoppers. The Westchester Broadway Theater's Give a Gift, Get a Gift Christmas Special is back. Right now, for every gift certificate for two you buy to the WBT at the regular low price, you'll receive a bonus voucher that's good for an absolutely free ticket you can use to one of our great main stage musicals for 2014, from Mari Esten's Titanic to our long-awaited return of South Pacific. Each certificate you buy is good for two and includes a delicious served dinner and a great Broadway musical concert or special. And they're good till January 31st of 2015. They're perfect for anyone on your shopping list. And now, for every gift certificate for two you buy, you'll receive one bonus voucher for yourself. That's an $80 value. They're available at the theater box office or by phone at 914-592-2222. You can order online at BroadwayTheater.com. You can even pick them up at our holiday booths at the Jefferson Valley Mall, the Palisades Mall, Poughkeepsie Galleria, or the Danbury Fair Mall. Give the gift that everyone loves this year and get a bonus gift for yourself. Our Give a Gift, Get a Gift special, now through Christmas Eve, only at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Well, welcome back. This is Westchester on the Level, and what we're going to be doing now... Oh, well, you know, I should remember to give out this number. I usually remember when Rich Nayrog's on, but I'm sorry, so I apologize for forgetting. But if you want to give us a call, you're more than welcome to do so. The phone number to dial us is 347-205-9201. Is 347-205-9201. And if you want to reach us through Skype, you can do that as well. You could send, you could look up E-A-E-I-N, E has the 18, and you'll be able to reach me by Skype. So Skype, E-H-E-Z-I-18, the number 18, and so E-H-E-Z-I-1-8. And, of course, the phone number 347-205-9201. And, you know, I'm wondering, we've got this setup now, which is a little more sophisticated than it used to be, and hopefully the sound is better. So, you know, to be honest, I've been so busy, I haven't even been able to hear how this all sounds, but I hope it is much better than before. Well, over the weekend, a lot of things happened. And one of the things was this investigation that we made with regard to, and this is the title of it, it's a hesitorial, it's the incoming city council president, the discipline of many Yonkersites before taking office. Sounds very critical, doesn't it? But listen in, and then you'll be able to appreciate it. Again, maybe only one perspective, not a problem, maybe just one perspective, but it needs to be answered one way or the other. So let's review it. It reads, and this is what I wrote. It reads, the deep ties incoming Yonkers McLaughlin has engaged and nurtured during his ministry in office have him churn up the likes of Kathy Spring Spencer. Now, she will be the next city council president's chief of staff. Her salary, approximately $120,000 a year. Money doesn't really matter. Well, for her, it does. But while it is fully appreciated that Kathy Spring Spencer and Leah McLaughlin have a good working relationship, her return to City Hall diminishes the likelihood of a, quote, new beginning, end quote, for the incoming Yonkers City Council President Leah McLaughlin. Now, many Yonkers' hopes will be dashed by this move alone. Kathy Spring Spencer's reputation precedes her and is likely to still be wanting. A close associate, Steve Tevert, will likely hold some office under McLaughlin's auspices, but it has yet to be proven. That's not a negative. It just is what it is. I happen to like Mr. Tevert, and eventually he will have some sort of position in the administration of the city council president's office. Anyway, in the meantime, McLaughlin's incoming entourage has begun the process because the walls will be painted and new carpets laid. That's what everybody tells me. I'm worried about it. It's just they're going to walls and they'll lay a couple of carpets, but then this is the point, but most costly will be the interior accoutrements. Desks and the like will be taken out of the budget allotted for the president's office. Will the cost ever be revealed? Not likely. Do we have the money? That's the question, because while everybody says we don't have the money, what's interesting is, yeah, we don't have the money, but we're spending the money. And whose money are we spending? There's no allocation to the council president's office that is his. It's not his money. It's the taxpayers' money. Isn't it interesting how quick they are to spend it? This guy hasn't even come into office yet, but he's setting it up so everything will work out fine, as if he's incapable of waiting his turn. But whatever. Okay, so were the process not hush-hush? This is the point. Were the process not hush-hush, rather if it were made public, this under-the-radar conduct will put a kibosh on the public's expectation. And isn't that the point? The first salvo from the McLaughlin campaign effort is just to shut down the public. Just doubts whatsoever that there will conceivably be a change with this new administrator in the position of city council president. What a disastrous first move. But again, a lot of people, when they gain access to office, dismiss all sensibility, all the ability to think that what they do is in the public eye. I'm sure they kicked off this article. You know what? They should be put on notice once and for all before they put their stinky little feet into the office, that people will be watching every move they make. And you know what? It's up to them to prove to the public that they're doing right by the public. They're doing right by the taxpayer. They're doing right by the voters. They're doing right by the city. And it's all about the city. And when it's all about the city, it's about the people who reside in the city. And if it's all about the people who reside in the city, then guess what? They can say, we had a hand in giving you what you not only deserve, but what you want and what you need and what you need. Instead of putting down a new carpet and make paint, you know, do a new paint job, as if that's going to make a difference. You know, this is such a rich place that everybody seems to think we got to redo the offices every time we get a new person in the office. Please, this is not the way to go in a city that's desperate and has no money. Forget it. It's not even worth trying or starting off. Anyway, so and I wrote, this is the typical conduct that emanated from Kathy Spring Spencer's mind when she was with staff for her husband, the former Yonkers mayor, John Spencer. She earned the reputation for stealthy misconduct. Counsel from Kathy Spring Spencer is starting off from a bad place in governance. But then again, Kathy Spring Spencer's got to prove herself. Nobody in the city's got to prove themselves to her. Who the hell is she? But that's okay, right? She's connected. She's one of the family and friends network. Well, isn't that better? Anyway, needed a sip of water. So, going on. Yonkers Inspector General Kitley Colville has not gained another term in office. Her term is over, expires at the end of this year. So we write, likely as former Inspector General Zussman maintains his abilities in office until the bounds of his term, so Dan Shore earned the position by former Yonkers Mayor Phil Amaconi. So it is assumed that Inspector General Colville will remain true to the office until she gains approval by the next Yonkers City Council or another person, will be presented to replace her. That's just the reality. The other issue with the Yonkers City Council is the fact that Steve Alfasi, who's the counsel to the Yonkers City Council Republicans, will continue his services, having earned support from the future Yonkers City Council Majority Leader, John Larkin. Now, Mark Constantine, longtime friend and law partner, will also gain a position as counsel. He's a friend of Lee Glavin. And Christian DePalermo is expected to be as their counsel. So the battle royale is elsewhere. The battle royale will be on the Democratic side. Who will be chosen the Yonkers City Council Minority Leader? Will it be Christopher Johnson in the 1st District? Or Mike?
Great Seven? News for holiday shoppers. The Westchester Broadway Theaters.
Okay. Well, in the 2nd District? Or Johnson espouses Democratic tenets with fervor, but, well, Sabatino believes he's the conciliatory force that moves issues forward with his colleagues across the political divide. Alex Johnson, employed by Democratic Conference leader Senator Andreas Cousins, against Sabatino, whose partner is employed by Assembly Member Shelley Mayer. And the deciding factor may fall on Johnson's friend, Council Member-elect Corazon Pineda in the 2nd District, who may lean supportively toward Johnson. The youth of Yonkers, young Democrats, may win the day. We will simply have to wait for the results. These issues are always fought behind closed doors. Again, doctors and tell anybody what's going on because they're all in this process every time. Every time there's a reallocation of power, and the pathetic thing about it is that all the Democratic side or on the Republican side, they are so embarrassed to tell the public the truth, they actually believe they're doing right by the public interest. Well, if that were so, then why don't they just say it the way it is? Why does everything take so long? They've only got each other to commiserate with. Really, come on, does it really make a difference? Ugh, it just goes on and on. Anyway, the names are superfluous, inconsequential, if you will. What matters is the fact that the public is feeling cold Kathy Springs Spencer. This will be the beginning of a long legacy of disappointment from a city more repeat of the suffering they endured at her hand in the past. And that's the point. If she can prove herself to be better than the ilk that she used to be, then you got yourself something going on. You're capable of manipulating, using, and abusing the system. Don't think she's always using it for the good. And let's see if this person is going to be sitting out there smoking a cigarette at 2 in the afternoon and who knows how many times. And will she be again shopping for her children in Bronxville when she should be doing the job as she did when she was chief of staff for the mayor when she didn't want any know? Everybody knows what she did. Give me a goddamn break. And that's the point. And the point is that these same has-beens are being brought back into government. They proved themselves ineffective in moving the city toward a better financial place and divided the city on color lines as well and on every other means because they also are on ethnic lines. And that's the bottom line. They have created a difficult to actually master because they were the proponents of the decay that has been left behind. And they come back and save the day now. Well, we'll see what they can do. And I'll tell you one thing. What only today in governance is that these people should know, must know, had better know, and if they don't, they'll one way or the other, when the door hits them in the back as they're forced out, is that they had better do the right thing by the public interest. And that's all that matters. The only thing that matters, it's not for them. It's for the public interest. And you know, isn't it always interesting how they berate the city? They got nothing to say. You know why they had nothing to say for all these years? Because they all sleep together. They all sleep together. Whether it be John Spencer, and Nick Spano and what's his name, Angela Martinelli, all in the same goddamn bed. Every last one of them. It's the biggest orgy going on in the city forever. And everybody knows it. But the thing that's really interesting on the other end, isn't it interesting? Everyone's got something to say. When these people are pushed forward, what do you hear? You hear nothing. You hear nothing. Oh, give them a chance. Oh, it has nothing to do. Steve Tavert's a good guy. Who ever said anything different? About Leah McLaughlin? These people have to prove they didn't win anything by gaining office. They didn't win shit. They won is the shit that they created in order to be able to win. And let's not forget that election process. And everyone had a hand in it. And it all came down from the mayor's office. He, the mayor, Mayor Mike Spano, was only interested in having Leah McLaughlin come into the mix. That's why you had what you had on the Democratic side. That you had what you had. Every aspect of it all. Look at the non-players that were thrown into the mix just to create the illusion of fairness. But, you know, they can't quite handle the truth, as I've said this before. Anyway, so that's the story. I'm at no point going any deeper. It's up to them to prove their mettle. We'll see if they have anything that they can prove it with. I doubt it, but I keep hearing from very, very powerful people that I'm wrong and I will be proven wrong, and that they have great hopes for the city council, for the membership of the city council, doing the right thing as I could. Well, you know what? I hope they're right, and I hope that I'm wrong, because it would really be disheartening to realize that my mind has probably been shot somehow. But I don't believe that these old farts, as they say, have changed the color of their stripes. Their stripes have not changed. They don't know. Supposedly they have a way of maybe recognizing something. All of these people have drunk the same drink. It's the same Kool-Aid. They haven't moved ahead. They haven't moved back. They only are reliving their past in the hope that they can still do what they used to do. And that goes for theft and corruption. I won't forget all that crap that she pulled when she was in City Hall with her husband. So, but it's not clean. It begins filthy. And who's going to clean that up? We'll see if Kathy Spring Spencer has got what it takes to clean up her mess, because no one else is going to clean it up for her. She deserves to get down there and clean it up herself. No pooper scoopers for me. It's all her job to do. And the bottom cares. 4 years minimum of this. We'll see if she can prove anything. And all you'll see at the end of the day is that she'll be able to incorporate all the stuff that she used to do before, such as fixing up the phones, listening in, doing all the things that she never had a right to do. She pulled all of that stuff. That place is wired to the hilt. And you know what? She's got a finger on all of it. What a mess. What a miserable, miserable failure for a city, and yet the city paid for this corruption. By her. And who cares whether she had a right to it or not? Who else would have given her authority if it wasn't her husband, the former mayor? So, you know, it is what it is, folks. Can't blame it. Next thing we know, John Spencer will have a job too, right? Everybody else is getting a job. Do you need a job? You know what? Maybe you should call up Kathy Spring Spencer. I'm sure she'll be dispensing all kinds of jobs. Before you know it, we'll have everybody employed. Ah, what a mess. What a mess. Well, that's okay. That's what they're good for. All right, so let's see what else is happening. Oh, there's another big news story. An exclusive, no less. Interestingly enough, just want you to know. On Thursday of last week, people who have a connection to Rob Astorino, including the spokesperson, who did not call back on Thursday, did not reach him until Saturday, and you know what? There was no point in waiting any longer. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, do I need? Is this the way they function? Maybe they do with everybody else, but as far as the young community is concerned, you can go kiss my you-know-what. The bottom line is, that's not news. And you know what? This is a game of media, and the media has to be really good at what they do. And the bottom line is, this is the story that hit the fans, and that is that the Rob Astorino, the Westchester County Executive, won a wonderful election in a predominantly Democratic county, won 56% of the vote, eclipsing the challenger who really should not ever been a poster boy for the Democrats. But the bottom line is, the Democrats' mistake, because the mayor of New Rochelle, Noam Bramson, is conflicted by all his inability and his inner person with a great degree of excellence in education and in lifestyle, who is incapable, literally incapable of any of that knowledge and any of that empathy goodness to the city, the queen on the sound, the one and only New Rochelle. Look at all the time he's been there, and look at the decline of a city. I think it's the sixth largest city in the state. What a pathetic character. And this at the same time, well, where none other than the Democrats, they said, oh, well, we're going to take over the whole shebang. And, you know, Klugman, the guy who's the head of the Democratic Party up there, another windbag that always works in Biden. People know he exists. You know, maybe finagling there is, because politics, the world of politics is as corrupt as it can become. People work with each other. They stab each other in the back, and then the next day they come and kiss and make up. It's just amazing. And yet they make believe that they live in a different world, but they don't. So getting back to Rob Astorino, did such a wonderful job. And the next thing we know, everyone's talking about him running for governor in next year's race against Governor Cuomo. Now, I don't really care what you think about Governor Cuomo one way or the other. I don't know if I feel and whether I like all this or not, but that's not the issue. That is not the issue. If he's vulnerable, fine. If he's not vulnerable, that's fine too, whatever it is. But let's look at it from a different perspective. Let's look at what counts. What counts in politics? I'll tell you what counts. Size. You know what size we're talking about? We're talking about money. We're talking about the $30 million that Mr. Andrew Cuomo, the governor of the state of New York, has in his coffers. On the other side, we have Rob Astorino, who, after this particular race, got $1,000. Well, there you go. You think he's going to be able to raise a difference? The answer is absolutely, positively no. Is he the best candidate? Maybe for some, maybe not for others. I'm not going to judge. I'm just not going to judge. But I know one thing, this whole concept of him for governor is a ruse. It is a fit. It is absolutely a waste. He will never go that far. But what he's doing is trying to make believe that he's running for governor in order to be able to bring money into his coffers, you know, asserting that he's running for governor, and at the end of the day, when he realizes that he can't raise the money, that in turn, the only thing that he will do is try to run for governor against the incumbent DiNapoli. Well, fine, whatever it is, whether you like DiNapoli or you don't like DiNapoli, it doesn't really make a difference. What does matter is from the perspective of Rob Astorino, the county executive who just won the race for county executive for a second term, the bottom line is that his credibility rests on the fact that when he spoke to the public and when he ran the first time, he said he would maintain a credible and consistent effort to hold the line. So he was pragmatic in his engineering of the budget, and he did hold the line, and of the voter when they went to re-elect or to elect a new city executive, it was to favor Rob Astorino because he held the line on taxes. That's all that mattered. That was the only issue. Every other issue was a deflective one. So that's what really mattered. And it was interesting enough for me that at least the public saw that this was the correct move. I personally couldn't stand Rob Astorino. Why couldn't I stand him? I did not like him personally. I dislike the manner by which his administration runs, and that is shut down, certainly from us. We can't get anywhere with anybody other than a call from some idiot that works there that probably has to the city of Yonkers, and they want to pump me for information. I give a hoot. The point is, that's the reason there is no connection to the county, and they did whatever they did. Meantime, while that's happening, you know, Democrats are in disarray. They don't know, just absolutely don't know. Oh, another thing that wasn't in the article. So we hear that Ken Jenkins will lose his position as chairman of the legislators, and it will go to none other than Kaplowitz. And it will be Jim Maizano. So you heard it here first officially if you haven't heard it before. I'm sure the rumors have been flying around. It just never seemed all that important to me. You know, before it was like a given, and that's caused the disintegration of Mr. Jenkins in the process from that time before the election and on. And I just hope that he finds his wits about himself, because it's not good for him. And I don't want him to finish. He's a good guy. But, you know, it is what it is. This is it's a game for big boys, and it's a tough one. It's a very, very tough one. Very few supporters in politics. If you're powerful and you can maintain your power, they all love you. If you lose in any way, shape, or form, you're worth little. Worth little. And interestingly enough, the only time the contender against incumbent Rob Astorino, when he was running for re-election, which Rob Astorino won, was Noam Bramson. Nobody said a word in all the years that he was mayor. He was touchable. But the minute he lost, all the stuff that is on his watch was criticized for the first time ever. For the first time ever. And not only the city in New Rochelle was complacent. They allowed everything to happen. Even the derogatory remarks that one would suppose hear from the Republican side, who said, oh, he's just a Democrat. It was never a Democrat issue. It was an issue of incompetence. It was an issue of corruption. It was an issue about Noam Bramson, who would rather take money from special interest and steer the city council there toward one end, and they, like idiots, swallowed the swill that they were offered. That's not Kool-Aid. That's garbage that they got. They got polluted water, and they drank it up thinking it was the best of wines. But they did know. But then once they started drinking, they forgot. And that's the point. Politics by those within for their benefit. And you know what? All the critics are impotent because they care to only say impotent, but they just want to be part of the game. They're like, oh, let me see if I can somehow prick the side of your arm with a pin. I was able to stab you one way or the other. Meaningless, impotent, ineffective, not really critical argument. Just a namby-pamby approach to nothing, which ends up just perpetuating the bullshit, because those people that want to become engaged don't even hear a credible argument and are never shown the reality of what's there. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe we're too provincial. We're not provincial when we work in New York, but somehow or another, when we come back to sleep here in our homes in Westchester County, we lose our ability to go. We have to be at the cutting edge, at the leading edge of everything we do in New York, whether it be on Madison Avenue, whether it be on the technological sections of the city, whether it be in film, with design, or in anything else, or in banking, or you name it. So that's the question. What's the reticence of the people who are so-called critical? And what are they critical of? Good question, don't you think? Well, I see that we're at that point. We're almost at the 11 o'clock hour. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to remind people, if they want to or care to give us a call, to give us a call at 347-205-9201, 347-205-9201. And if you want to reach us using Skype, excuse me, you can give us a call at EHEI number 18. So it's EHEZI 18, and you can reach that. So let's find out what's going on. But I'm going to play for you the commercial about the Yonkers Tribune. Bear with me, and then we'll be right back with some more stuff to cover.
It's 11 hours.
No one's goes.
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Tongued Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome equipped with a digital camera and a steno pad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914-562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
ehezi@hush.com. Inquiring about advertising. So, the other editorial over the weekend. Again, Yonkers taxpayers screwed over the sale of the old city jail. $37, isn't that great? From $2.5 million to $699,937. And oh, you'll understand as we go through this whole story and the comments that are with it, and I'll explain not only what's going on, but also the comments to listen in. Yonkers Mayor Mike Spano defined this week's conduct often conflicted Yonkers City Council as a new beginning. The mayor specifically noted his legislative package earning bipartisan support, approval for the sale of the old Yonkers City Jail, among other agenda, to which, quote, no backup, quote, was afforded the public or the press. So talking about backup in the agenda. Now, Mayor Mike Spano was most proud of the sale of Yonkers Old City Jail to famed art collector Daniel Wolf and his wife, business partner, artist Maya Lin. The city charter adhered to with respect to the deal, quote, end quote, it would perhaps be construed as a quote. Instead, it is the same old backroom demeanor that, with all due respect, is another deal that burdens the taxpayer. And let's look at how it does. Now, the Yonkers City Jail was initially listed at a valuation of $2.5 million. Yonkers Mayor Mike Spano admitted no valuation process was undertaken to assess the true value of the building. Even so, Mayor Mike Spano suggested it was valued at $1.6 million. At one time, the Journal News advised it would be sold for $1.2 million. The final agreement was to go ahead with the sale at a cost of $1 million. Ouch, from 2.5 to 1. That's really unbelievable. So an RFP, a request for proposal, was undertaken by the city to gain interest from developers for the sale of this waterfront property. Yonkers City Hall advised no interest was shown with respect to the property. Without any further process, Yonkers Tribune next learns that Rand Commercial Realty is afforded the exclusive right to promote the sale of the property. They did not earn the right to sell the property. Our owner, Paul Adler, a business associate, a former New York State Senator Spano, association between the two men, yet other sources, which remain anonymous, assert otherwise. Now, when time permits, I will consider revealing more of this web of deceit and plausible deniability that only works with those who have no other choice but to eat the gruel. Now, Mayor Mike Spano's beginnings mimic the conduct of the past. Within 3 weeks' time of learning of the sale, art collector David Wolf, the beard for artist Maya Lin, asks City of Yonkers taxpayers for tax breaks valued at over $30,000 for, quote, their purchase of the old Yonkers City Jail. Elected officials looked the other way, deluding themselves into promoting this sale to meet kosher halal standards. I know that is not the case. Now, Wolf Lynn's company on November 18th of 2013, acting through a New York State corporation, Cahokia LLC, which Wolf manager requested financial assistance through Yonkers Industrial Development Agency for the subsidy of $1,000 that was approved in the December 11, 2013 meeting of the IDA. Now, Yonkers Mike Spano is chairman of the board of the IDA. Now, the funds requested by Cahokia LLC seek an estimated sales tax exemption to the tune of $117,250 and $182,813 in property tax subsidies. Now, defining the winners, we have Commercial Rand Realty, who earned $30,000 for facilitating the sale. Cahokia LLC purchased a $2.5 million designated property for $1 million, thereby saving $1.5 million. So far, Cahokia's costs total $1,030,000, yet reducing that cost with taxpayer-funded assistance reduces the final cost to Cahokia Wolf Lynn to $729,937, but earns Koi only $699,937 because there's that $30,000 that Cahokia Wolf Lynn had to pay to the commercial rent. Now, what's so interesting about this is that the sale of this property promoted the fact that the facade of the building would be kept intact. We have learned, since I wrote this, we have learned that the building will be torn down, will be totally torn down and done from scratch. Am I going to argue about that? No. I'm not going to say anything about that. That's the decision that that was made. I don't agree with it or disagree with it. What concerns me, as always, is the fact that all of this stuff is hidden. It's denied to be made public. And that's the problem with this city and the conduct of City Hall and the conduct of the City Council, and that's the problem. The people who have been elected to office, who are supposed to assist in the governance, the benevolent governance that really deserves a break and can a break, is if governance was inclusive of the public's needs. But it's not. And they lie. Do I know that this thing happens all the time? These special dispensations, these special subsidies, this family and friends network that are only, what do they call it, courted in order to enter the fold and to create something, you know, which is not fully expressed to the public. Yeah, I know it. But that doesn't make it right. Yes, it's a standard that we've all accepted for reasons, but it doesn't make it right. And it's over. The deal is over. You know, let me put it to you this way. Like, why do I put this in here? Because it's important that when the records need to be looked at in 5 years or 10 years down the road, this website, which is paid for 10 years in advance, will be here. They will be here. And it will be here just to make sure all the information is there and will be maintained. So people look, yes, that's exactly what was said, and this is how it happened. Okay, so the last paragraph. The Yonkers taxpayer is screwed. Kitley Koval, Yonkers Inspector General, if reappointed by Yonkers Mayor Mike Spano for another 5-year term, must investigate the burden placed on the taxpayers' back without their okay and definitely without their knowledge. Should the Inspector General not earn another term, her successor must be tasked to investigate the taxpayers by this. If it were a gift, which it seems it is, the taxpayers' best wishes and their respective names would be appended to the good luck card that should be presented to Wolf and Lynn at the next ribbon cutting. Ugh, now let's read some of the comments. You get a sense of the way this city functions. This has been going on for years, someone says. Spano is not the first person to do this. in fairness, look back over the years of all the projects, the warnings from the state comptroller and the political mess that drives these fair money legally. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, it's been going on for years. Yes, it's not fair. Yes, there are warnings from the state comptroller, but the state comptroller has no effect because he's got no teeth. And you know the reason he's got no teeth is while he points out the issues, the Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, is the one that's with the teeth, but I haven't seen the Attorney General go after the city of Yonkers for all the abuses that are expressed by the state comptroller. So the facts are there. It's just that Attorney General seems to work as to be too busy with other issues, or is just not, he doesn't have what it takes to get into the mix. That's the bottom line. Next one says, has the incoming city council president gutted his office space? And we'll have new offices and furniture. How much will this cost the city? Financial control board, here we come. You know, the first part of it is all true. The financial control board, it may come, it may not come. But again, let's not throw our hands up in the air and say the financial control board will be here. They might. He may have been a man for Mike Spano all along. He certainly doesn't seem to have done anything to make a difference or to change the equation. This whole celebration of the sale of the jail, you know what? This should not be more than a 24-hour moment, but they're dragging it on forever as if the whole world is concerned one way or the other with a $700,000 sale. Give me a break. They're lying through their teeth. They do the press releases. They do the spin. They sent this out to the Westchester County Business Journal, and they lauded over the fact what's going on here. Oh, they're going to save the building. They're going to save the facade. They're going to do this, that. No, they're not. No, they're not. Hey, the Green Policy Task Force told us that the Tonya Hall building, the facade would be kept. Facade is gone. Drive by the Buena Vista parking lot and you'll see the building to Tonya Hall on the other side. And you will see that they lied. They goddamn lied. But do they care? Did the Inspector General get involved? No. Did the Green Policy Task Force say anything? No. That's the bottom line, isn't it? Hush, hush, hush. That's what it's all about. That's why we got an email address. It's encrypted. Nobody can read it. Oh, give me a break. It's just too much. Anyway, the next one says, how's that firehouse that Ridge Hill Development agreed to working out? Other interests involved to make the city forget about it? Really? I can't forget the fact that they haven't come through with the firehouse. That was the deal. Wasn't the deal. That's what they voted on. That was one of the reasons they rationalized it. What a mess. And someone says, look at the sale of all the property to Tara Circle. Even more ridiculous. We've written about it, goddamn it. But nobody cares to look at it. Nobody cares to look at it. And you know what? I'm telling you again, if it would be smarter, if you would just post what it is when you get to know it, if you want to give me a call, you can. But the more you hide, the more you know, this is all detrimental to the city. And the reason this city gets away with the stuff that it does, and it's not the city, it's not the people, it's the people who claim to be our elected officials, who are our elected officials, who are screwing with the taxpayers' money and with the deals that they formulate, all behind the doors. And they come to hurt you. They come to hurt you. This is the city of conservative concepts. So you may have a preponderance of Democrats as opposed to Republicans, all conservative in their thinking, and the point is that they really diverge on most issues. And yet they want to make believe that there's something more here. But at the end, us, the taxpayer, by not delivering what needs to be delivered. Now, the question then becomes, well, could they do better? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe this is the end game. Maybe they're at the cutting edge. I don't think so. I don't think so. But if that's the case, you know, How many years does it take to start formulating and bringing back something in return that's of value? Seems to take a very long time. It's what it is.
Great news for holiday shoppers. The Westchester Broadway Theater's Give a Gift, Get a Gift Christmas special is back. Right now, for every gift certificate for two you buy to the WBT at the regular low price, you'll receive a bonus voucher that's good for an absolutely free ticket you can use to one of our great main stage musicals for 2014. From Mari Eston's Titanic to our long-awaited return of South Pacific. Each certificate you buy is good for two and includes a delicious served dinner and a great Broadway musical concert or special. And they're good till January 31st of 2015. They're perfect for anyone on your shopping list. And now, for every gift certificate for two you buy, you'll receive one bonus voucher for yourself. That's an $80 value. They're available at the theater box office or by phone at 914-592-2222. You can order online at BroadwayTheater.com. You can even pick them up at our holiday booths at the Jefferson Valley Mall, the Palisades Mall, Poughkeepsie Galleria, or the Danbury Fair Mall. Give the gift that everyone loves this year and get a bonus gift for yourself. Our Give a Gift, Get a Gift special, now through Christmas Eve, only at the Westchester Broadway Theater. Great news for holiday shoppers. The Westchester Broadway Theater's Give a Gift, Get a Gift Christmas special is back. Right now, for every gift certificate for two you buy to the WBT at the regular low price, you'll receive a bonus voucher that's good for an absolutely free ticket you can use to one of our great main stage musicals for 2014. From Mari Eston's Titanic to our long-awaited return of South Pacific. Each certificate you buy is good for two and includes a delicious served dinner and a great Broadway musical concert or special. And they're good till January 31st of 2015. They're perfect for anyone on your shopping list. And now, for every gift certificate for two you buy, you'll receive one bonus voucher for yourself. That's an $80 value. They're available at the theater box office or by phone at 914-592-2222. You can order online at BroadwayTheater.com. You can even pick them up at our holiday booths at the Jefferson Valley Mall, the Palisades Mall, Poughkeepsie Galleria, or the Danbury Fair Mall. Give the gift that everyone loves this year and get a bonus gift for yourself. Our Give a Gift, Get a Gift special, now through Christmas Eve, only at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Because the call did come through, but there it is. So maybe you're hearing this, and I hope this is working. It just seems that it is. Okay, so maybe this is it. So I'm calling myself off a different number, and so hopefully this is going through. So the big question now, assuming that we're up and running, is to find another page here. And, well, you know what? I think this is going to be okay. We'll be able to hold on to that. And we'll be able to move on here. I'm going to rearrange some of the layouts here. Okay, so it looks like it's pretty good. Now, let's get back to some of the other issues here. Let me go back, so bear with me. I really don't know what's happening here, but hopefully we're on. Okay, this was not the right number. Okay. Well, it looks like we're on. So, you know, that's cool. And let me just see. Oh, yeah, here it is. This is what I wanted. So then someone says that position should be abolished. I guess they're talking about the position of the IG, and the city should be monitored by the state's office. What a waste of taxpayers' salary. Once in a while, they splash mud on a little fish to give themselves legitimacy. And then someone says, Hezzy, do you mean to tell us that this was not on the up and up? I'm shocked. The Yonkers taxpayers screwed. Kitley Colville, Yonkers Inspector General, if reappointed by the Yonkers Mayor Mike Spano, read what you just printed. Do you really think she will find anything out of order? As far as adhering to the city charter, that would be something. A new beginning for sure. Well, That is really funny. But, you know, that's what I got to love about the people in the city of Yonkers. That's why I really love Yonkers so much. We've got such a great sense of humor, it's so important to have that. And, the thing that's also interesting is that we're going through a crisis, as you well know, and we're just coming out of this weekend snowstorm, which dumped a lot of snow. And at the same time, what's really interesting as well is that besides dumping a lot of snow, we're expecting another snowstorm, I think, late tonight. But that may go on into tomorrow. I'm not quite sure. Have to review that. But we'll just see what's what. Oh, let's quickly look here. The good old Green Policy Task Force, they're having a meeting. What are they doing? Oh, they're having a meeting on Wednesday at 6:30. They're going to be talking about the Green Building Symposium with SWEAC. Oh, I could just barf. These people are a waste of time. Not a word from them about the facade to the Teutonia Hall building. Not a word. You know, these people are stinkers, and they're out there because they want to take the honor of making believe they're doing something of value. Well, why don't you hold the people who claim to have been responsible for maintaining the facade from actually tearing it down? What's the problem here? What is the problem? Why don't you do something about it? In the same way that the city wants to cover up the fact that you had that problem at the Nepran Community Center last week. What is the problem? Can't you tell us the truth? Oh, God, I have to find out, actually, if they ever met their payroll on Friday, because that was the whole purpose of this, quote, make-believe robbery earlier in the week. I tell you, they think they got it all going on, you know, but I learned every trick under the sun here in Yonkers. I know how they work already. This is the thing that frightens the shit out of me, because I understand it. I mean, is this pathetic or what? Oh. Okay, let's just look at some other things that are really important, and that's going to be on the international level. I see that we're just about at the half-hour point, so let me quickly play for you what's happening at the Westchester Broadway Theater, and hopefully this will work, and we'll be back.
Great news for holiday shoppers. The Westchester Broadway Theater's Give a Gift, Get a Gift Christmas Special is back. Right now, for every gift certificate for two you buy to the WBT at the regular low price, you'll receive a bonus voucher that's good for an absolutely free ticket you can use to one of our great main stage musicals for 2014, from Mari Esten's Titanic to our long-awaited return of South Pacific. Each certificate you buy is good for two and includes a delicious served dinner and a great Broadway musical concert or special. And they're good till January 31st of 2015. They're perfect for anyone on your shopping list. And now, for every gift certificate for two you buy, you'll receive one bonus voucher for yourself. That's an $80 value. They're available at the theater box office or by phone at 914-592-2222. You can order online at BroadwayTheater.com. You can even pick them up at our holiday booths at the Jefferson Valley Mall, the Palisades Mall, Poughkeepsie Galleria, or the Danbury Fair Mall. Give the gift that everyone loves this year and get a bonus gift for yourself. Our Give a Gift, Get a Gift special, now through Christmas Eve, only at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Welcome back. Well, it's another moment. A bomb scare has prompted Harvard evacuations. Harvard University evacuated four buildings today after receiving an unconfirmed report that explosives had been planted in them, the school said. There were no reports of explosions, according to the Cambridge Police Department. Access to Harvard Yard, home to several of the evacuated buildings, was restricted to residents with university identification, Harvard said. After receiving the bomb report, the Harvard University Police Department told students and others to evacuate the Science Center and Thayer, Sever, and Emerson Halls. Now, the university said in a statement, officials said they had no reason to believe any other part of the university was under threat. Out of an abundance of caution, the buildings have been evacuated while the report is investigated, the university said. Harvard's focus is on the safety of our students, faculty, and staff. Now, Harvard requested that the Massachusetts State Police send a bomb squad and bomb dogs, said Trooper Dustin Fitch, quote, we don't know the specific threat at this time, he said. The Federal Bureau of Investigation is also responding to the incident, officials said. And the Harvard Crimson, the campus newspaper, reported that students filed into spacious Annenberg Hall after the buildings were evacuated. The dean told students there that their exams were canceled for the morning, according to the paper's Twitter feed. Now, so this is really unbelievable. This report is coming out from the Wall Street Journal. It's by Jennifer Levitz and Devlin Barrett. Unbelievable. So that's the latest news as it comes out. Let me just quickly look. Oh, and I do see that the connection that's supposed to give a superior quality in you know, like through the microphone, that's the one that died. So luckily I had the backup basically ready. There could have been a 5-minute time lag until I got it back up. So that's really important. So I apologize for that. See, they were constantly fixing and doing and this, that, and the other. But what can I tell you? It's just crazy. And yet, I think the system is pretty good, but it's a problem. Well, speaking of Boston, you know, the Boston bomber believed he was a victim of mind control. Give me a break. Oh, please, it was a victim of mind control. Remember that guy, suspected Boston Marathon bomber Tamerlan Tsarnaev, believed that he was a victim of mind control, according to the results of a 5-month investigation published yesterday by the Boston Globe. Tsarnaev, who was killed in a shootout with police 4 days after allegedly carrying out the bombings with his brother, Zohar, Tsarnaev was thought to have some form of schizophrenia, according to family friends, while his mother said Tsarnaev felt like there were two people living inside of him. Yeah, like it took her forever to say that. He believed in majestic mind control, which is a way of breaking down a person and creating an alternative personality with which they must coexist. Donald Larkin, a 67-year-old who attended a Boston mosque with Tamerlan, told the Globe, "You can give a signal, a phrase, or a gesture and bring out the alternate personality and make them do things. Tamerlan thought someone might have done that to him." Oh, great. So he never did anything. It's not his fault. Oh, you know, I can't even read this stuff. It just gets pathetic. Oh, it goes on and on and on every time. You know, where was the help that he needed before it got to the point where he was so delusional? Or taken over by a second person. I mean, give me a break. I mean, this is supposed to be his excuse? He's dead and buried. And at this point, thank God already. Because you know what? Who would want to tolerate this BS now? Where was the help that he needed from before? Now everyone's got something to say? Really? It's the same thing in politics. Don't say it after they're dead and buried. Say it now when it matters. You know, I remember somebody said to me that their mother had given them a gift as she was getting older. And she said, and she was always asked, like, why did you give us this gift? You know, well, why don't you live with it? And she's, and the mother said, I love this. I want to share it with you. I want you to have it. I don't want to give it to you after I'm dead and gone so that I don't even know if you appreciated it. And you know what? That mother was right, if that's what made her feel comfortable. You know, it was terrific. I thought it was a great idea, you know, whatever it was. So, you know, that woman was very, very much, you know, beyond the norm at the time. I never heard that happening from anybody else, but I thought it was a brilliant move. Anyway, so it goes. Let's see what else is going on. And we may just move away from some of these things here. Just want to quickly see if there's anything that came out of the news that is literally a last-minute thing and that needs to come out. Okay. All right. I don't see anything here. So what we're going to do is we're going to jump into the international world, see what's happening across the globe. And and then we'll move on from there. So bear with me a moment as we get that done. All right. Let's just see. Okay, this is the latest information. You may have heard Israel is retaliated after a soldier was killed by a Lebanese sniper. Israeli forces reportedly shot two Lebanese soldiers on Monday, just hours after a Lebanese army sniper killed an Israeli soldier as he drove along the border between the two countries. The first shooting took place near the border crossing called Rosh Hanikra. Now, Rosh Hanikra, which has been mostly calm since a month-long war between Hezbollah and Israel in the summer of 2006. One of the nice things about Rosh Hanikra is there are grottos there along the water's edge. It is absolutely breathtaking. But so that's what Rosh Hanikra is famous for. Anyway, in the summer of 2006, so the soldier killed was identified as Shlomi Cohen, 31, from the northern Israeli city of Afula. Now, Israel retaliated in the early hours of Monday morning by shooting the two Lebanese soldiers, according to the Associated Press. Israeli Army spokeswoman Lieutenant Libby Weiss said Israeli forces identified suspicious movement along the border just after midnight and opened fire. She said the shooting occurred near where Cohen was killed. Weiss had no details on the condition of the Lebanese soldiers. Lebanon's NNA said Israeli troops opened fire on a forested area on the Lebanese side of the border around 1 a.m. local time. The news agency did not report any Lebanese casualties. Now, Israel also lodged a complaint with the United Nations force in southern Lebanon and raised its state of preparedness along the border, said Israel Defense Force spokesman Peter Lerner. Now, we will not tolerate aggression against the state of Israel and maintain the right to exercise self-defense against perpetrators of attacks against Israel and its civilians, he said. Now, Lebanon's national news, NNA, confirmed the shooting by a member of the Lebanese army. It was not clear why the soldier opened fire. The Lebanese army has opened fire in the past after saying Israeli soldiers had tried to infiltrate into Lebanon. There was no immediate comment from Lebanese security officials, and UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said in a statement that both sides were, quote, cooperating with the United Nations to ascertain the facts, and he urged both sides to exercise restraints. Now, past tensions. Since the 2006 war, the border has experienced only sporadic violence. Israel has responded with airstrikes and artillery fire following a number of rocket attacks and shootings across the border. In the most serious incident, a high-ranking Israeli officer was killed by a Lebanese sniper in 2010 after Israeli forces tried to cut down a tree along the border. Now, Israel responded with artillery fire, killing two Lebanese soldiers and a journalist. Andrea Tenenti, a spokesman for United Nations forces in southern Lebanon, said the UN had been informed of a serious incident along the border. He said the peacekeeping force, UNIFIL, was in contact with both Lebanese and Israeli armies and that they were cooperating. The incident happened on the Israeli side of the blue line, he said, referring to a UN-drawn line demarcating the border between the two enemy states. He gave no further details, saying that UNIFIL was still investigating. A 2006 war broke out over Iranian-backed Hezbollah guerrillas crossing into Israel and captured two Israeli soldiers. The ensuing month-long conflict resulted in the deaths of approximately 1,200 Lebanese and 160 Israelis. Now, Hezbollah, which has an arsenal of tens of thousands of missiles and rockets aimed at Israel, is preoccupied with the war in neighboring Syria, where it is aiding the forces of President Bashar al-Assad, and Israeli officials believe Hezbollah is not interested in opening a new front with Israel at the current time. So, yeah, that's what's happening. let me just see. This is really interesting because it's a question of power. A coup attempt was thwarted, says the South Sudan president. South Sudan's president, Salva Kiir, on Monday said that government forces had thwarted an allegedly engineered by former Vice President Riek Machar, who was fired from his post in July. In a televised address to the nation and flanked by government officials, the president said the military had foiled the coup, orchestrated, quote, by a group of soldiers allied with a former vice president. The soldier had attacked the South Sudanese military headquarters in the capital of Juba late on Sunday, sparking sporadic clashes that continued on Monday. He said the attackers went and the armed forces are pursuing them, Keir said, who had dressed in military uniform rather than his trademark suit and cowboy hat. I promise you today that justice will prevail. The government is now in full control of the military situation in Juba, he said, ordering a dawn-to-dusk curfew in the city, and the UN urges calm. Now, the United Nations said Monday that hundreds of terrified civilians had sought refuge in a UN compound while others had locked themselves in their homes or were trying to flee to safer areas. Hilda Johnson, a special representative of the United Nations Secretary General for South Sudan, said in a statement that the UN mission in Juba was deeply concerned, quote unquote, over the fighting. As a special representative of the Secretary General, I urge all parties in the fighting to cease hostilities immediately and exercise restraint, the statement said. I have been in touch regularly with the key late leaders, including at the highest levels, to call for calm. Now, Mahar, an arch rival. Now, tension has been mounting in South Sudan since Kiir fired Mahar as his deputy in July. Mahar, who has expressed a willingness to contest the presidency in 2015, said after he was fired that if the country is to be united, it cannot tolerate a one-man's rule or it cannot tolerate dictatorship. So Mahar's ouster, part of a wider dismissal of the entire cabinet by Kiir, followed reports of a power struggle within the ruling party. At the time, the United States and the European Union urged calm amid fears of dismissals, political upheaval in the country. So while Kiir is leader of the ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement Party, many of the dismissed ministers, including Mahar, were key figures in the rebel movement that fought a decades-long war against Sudan, and that led to South Sudan's independence in 2011. Now, Mahar, a deputy chairman of the ruling party, is one of the country's most influential politicians. Officials said some arrests had been made after the botched coup attempt, but the state of Mahar was unclear, with the U.S. Embassy in Juba and the U.N. denying they had given him shelter. So South Sudan has experienced bouts of ethnic violence, especially in rural Jonglei State, since the country peacefully broke away from Sudan after a brutal, brutal civil war. So that's the crisis there. Hopefully it will not continue in a worse way. So let's just see what else is happening. Okay. We continue to watch what's going on in Ukraine. And since November 21, Kiev's Independence Square has been the home of Ukraine's pro-EU protesters. That's really the story there. So just aware that this is still going on. And this is really important. The European Union has suspended work on a trade deal with Ukraine. Let's just see what else is happening here. For some reason, I can't seem to get this. Well, you know, today, Peter O'Toole died on Saturday. I remember him well. What a wonderful movie, especially Lawrence of Arabia. Fantastic film. It's probably the most, it's the most panoramic film I've ever seen. It was such a powerful, powerful film. And unfortunately, with Peter O'Toole's death, we'll probably have an opportunity to see the film again. But, that's a nice thing, but certainly not for that reason, which is a shame. Also, you know, what's interesting in, let me see if I can get this. For some reason, we're having trouble with this. Let me see if this works. I'm trying to see if I can get this. I can't seem to pull it. Oh, right. Don't know why that is. Let me see if I can do something else. Okay, looks like we're getting a little movement here. All right, one second. This might work. Here it is. Socialist Party candidate Bachelet. She regains the presidency on a reform platform. Socialist Michelle Bachelet became Chile's president for a second time on Sunday after taking presidential elections on a reform platform, including an overhaul of education and taxes in the new constitution. Bachelet, who led the country between 2006 and 2010, won a landslide victory, returning the center-left to power in the copper-rich South American nation. Chile now finally, the time has come to carry out the changes, she told cheering fans in a victory speech in the capital of Santiago. It isn't going to be easy, but since when was it ever easy to change the world for the better, she said. The National Electoral Board said Bachelet won 62% of the vote against Evelyn Matthei's 38% after counting almost all of the ballots cast on Sunday in what was the worst defeat for the right in two decades. Bachelet, 62, has pledged to pass a wide range of reforms, including free post-secondary education, a new tax system, and adopting a new constitution. Her new majority coalition has a slim majority in Chile's parliament, but she'll need wider support from other lawmakers to accomplish all of her proposals under the country's multi-tiered congressional voting system. From torture victim to twice president, hugely popular since she left office in 2010, Bachelet was the front-runner candidate throughout her coalition's primary in July and the first round of the election in November. She's the daughter of an Air Force general who was killed for opposing the 1973 coup led by dictator Augusto Pinochet. Now, Bachelet was herself tortured before fleeing the country. She returned years later to work as a pediatrician and eventually entered politics. She became the country's first female leader in 2006, and Bachelet ended her first presidency in 2010 with 84% approval ratings, even though she accomplished little in the way of changes during her mandate. She then ran the United Nations Women's Agency before storming back into politics this year. She now has a chance to cement her legacy with popular reforms to dismantle more of the political and social legacy of the Pinochet era. Now, she spoke out in support of same-sex marriage and abortion in some cases during her campaign. While she has enough votes in Congress to pass tax increases on rich and educational reform, it is not sure she has the supermajorities needed to change the Pinochet-era electoral system and constitution. My God, she has that edge. Amazing. We'll see what she's able to do. And my God, wow, just can't imagine. One thing that was good, I don't know if you guys were listening in to, what is it, 60 Minutes? They're covering some of the news that we've been covering with you for quite a while. The cops, the persecution, the killings, the burnings of the churches, and all of that that goes on. It is absolutely frightening. And for the first time, we are cutting edge. I really just can't believe it at times. We are so cutting edge. It really just blows my mind because we are covering the topics that matter. You see, again, the issues are based on ethical concepts. You know, how can you be killing an indigenous people who've lived there even from the time of Christ? From the time of Jesus Christ, their beliefs have been there. They've been there for over 2,000 years. That's how far the legacy goes. The point is they are the original church, it's just fascinating. They make up about 10% of the population, and they've been constantly politically besieged and genocidally, treated whatever by the majority, and it's really, really pathetic. So it goes. Let's see if anything else has happened, particularly No, I don't see anything particularly there. Let me just see anything happened here in the U.S. Let me see. No, I don't think... I think that covers most of the news, to be honest with you. Okay, so let's just see what's happening later on in the week. Let me see if, well, we have a few moments just to see if anything else has come in quickly with regard to news. Okay, I don't see anything in particular at the moment. Okay, so no news reports from the city or anything like that. So I think we're safe that way. And then let's look and see if there's anything that came in with regard to our schedule for the rest of the week. So let's see. Tomorrow we're going to be speaking to Richard Narog. You know, he's always the highlight of the week, Richard Narog, and co-host of the show. He'll be on from 10 to 11. And then we'll have the opportunity afterwards to either discuss and extrapolate from the discussion that we have with him further on the topic or just delve into international affairs. Then on Wednesday, Professor Oren, we're going to speak to him. Fascinating story. And then from that, it'll be from 10 to 11. I mean, yeah, 10 to 11. And from 11 to 12, we're speaking to the outgoing president of the Yonkers City Council, Chuck Lesnick. And on Thursday, we're going to speak to Michael Matthews, a victim of violation in the military. They call that military sexual trauma. And I wish it would take the sexual part out of it. It's just literally a conduct of dominance and superiority in which the genitalia and other items can be used to literally, what do you call it, violate people physically. And so he's going to be talking to us about that issue. That'll be from 10 to 11, and we'll cover other issues thereafter. And then on Friday, we're going to be speaking to Senate Conference Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, and from 10 to 10:30, and from 10:30 on, Dr. Claire Reeves and associate from 10:30 to 12, Dorothy Mackey will be the associate we'll be speaking to, and they also will have been involved in military sexual trauma. That was Dorothy herself, and the doctor who will speak to us about a lot of these conditions, so we better understand what it is we're talking about. And then, of course, this all falls into place, and we did this months and months ago with respect to changing the scrutiny of the military when it comes to a military sexual trauma, and creating a protocol and a standard that will segregate the perpetrators from the accused victims who are often maligned within the military, and which is not quite on the level, it's not quite appropriate, and using standards in order to create a sense of credibility and for the military conduct. And again, you know, a lot of people will say, just like we talk here about in Yonkers, we have the Blue Truth articles. The point is, it's the issues that matter. No one's trying to change anything about the structure of the police department, but the Blue Truth ends up exposing many issues that need to be corrected. It's up to the administration, actually the commissioner's office, to straighten it out. And again, he has to find the backbone to stand up to the city hall, who constantly impose their vile politics into the equation. This is not about politics. This is about police and policing and the standards that need to be followed. And that's all that needs to be done. And nothing more. No one's looking to change anything there. And that's what's misunderstood by criticism. Get it together. I mean, we're not children anymore. We don't have to understand anything different. It just is what it is. Deal with it and fix it. And when you fix it, you'll have less criticism of the process. And nobody dislikes anyone in particular. But the culprits that are there that are trying to malign the system, they've got to go. It's just got to go. Fix it already. How long does it take? But you know what? Everything is politically engaged. That's why everything is moving along the way it has. And so far, it doesn't look like anything's going to be changing for the better. And, you know, you don't have to cry over the old ways that didn't work. Well, whatever the case is. So that's going to be discussed in the same way. We cover the military sexual trauma issue and the military and how they conduct, what was it, excuse me, last year, 26,000 people were violated. That's what's on the books. You hear close to 100,000 have been violated. What's going on in the military at home? Here stateside, people are getting raped. Among the people that are supposed to be protecting their back, instead they're hurting them. And the military knows it. And then you have people like Gillibrand who wants to pass law and this, that, or the other. It'll probably come about and come to the forefront in the Senate in January. We'll see. And then we'll see what the laws really say. That's the whole point, isn't it? Again, each of the people who are proponents are very difficult to talk to. And you can't get anything out of them. And they're going to grandstand with a lousy, lousy legislation that will be put together, and then they will tell you it's the best thing since apple pie, cream cheese, and who knows what else. Well, the bottom line is it's not so good. So we'll have to see what happens there. So that's the story. Well, I hope that, first of all, I apologize for the problem that we had. And hopefully that won't happen again. I'll have to make sure that I am fully maintained and ready for the go so I didn't waste like 5 minutes to try to figure out how to replicate what I had. And luckily I was close to it, but I just didn't think we'd have a problem today. But evidently we did, so I have to be aware of that. And I apologize for that technological crisis. And thank you for hanging in there with us. And what else do we have? And we just hope for a better day tomorrow, each day as it comes, and always with great, great anticipation of something positive, which keeps me going. And then certainly with Richard Nayrod, co-host of the show tomorrow, it should be a lot of fun. So that's the story. We'll speak to you then, and thank you again for staying with us. Be well. Goodbye. Let's see. How do I do this? Okay.